It's the unknown. Unknown. It's the unknown. Unknown creature.
It's us. It's us. It is us. Welcome to the Unknown Preacher LA. I am your host, your boy, the Unknown Preacher, aka LA, aka Lonzo. In other words, I'm just a nobody trying to tell everybody about somebody who can save anybody. Amen, amen, amen. And guess what, beautiful people? Guess who's back? I think they need to unmute their mic, though.
I'm back.
That's right, y'all. Jackie J is back in the building. What are you doing, Jackie? How are you?
I'm doing well, and I appreciate you on that list you said, but I think I'm working on another list right now.
See.
Things I may need.
Now, did I not have breakfast for you when you got here?
You did. I appreciated the McDonald's hash brown thing.
It was not McDonald's. It was First Watch, man. Come on now. Don't do me like that. How your week been?
It's been going well. You know, the weather's been really nice. How's your week been going?
It's been great, man. I'm telling you, this is... I'll tell you, God is just so good. It's just meeting new people, people talking about the podcast, asking about you. Several people have been asking, what's up with Jackie? What's going on with y'all? So glad to have you back. But I do think that you owe me an apology so all the listeners can hear. So until then, I decided I'm taking a vow of silence.
Okay, we'll see how long that will go for. I do apologize that I made you do it by yourself for that few times, but yeah, so anyway, it's Saturday, right?
I'm just playing, man. We
now, you know I have love for you. We go way back.
Way, way back, man. So you've been hearing the people we've announced for the big hip-hop gospel new generation event coming to Kinston.
Yep.
June 28th, man. That's wow. Wow.
It's only getting bigger and bigger as it gets closer to the day.
It is. I'm so excited about it. So far we announced that U-House, KP Crayon, and Sosa Brown will be at the gate.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what's up, man. That is what's up. And then the fourth person in Kinston is none other than
drum roll,
Quiet Storm, people. Quiet Storm. He will be in the building on June 28th in K-Town. What do you say about that? What do you think, Jackie? Oh, she muted herself again.
Oh, sorry. I said, how long is it going to go for? It sounds like it's supposed to be an all-day party.
It is, man. It's going to go for at least, I'm thinking, 3 to 4 hours, man.
Okay.
But yeah, I can tell you've been gone for a while, man. You're hitting the beat.
Yeah. Looks like somebody's been in my spot. Stuff moved around. I'll get it back right.
I had auditions, man. I was trying to replace you, man. No, I'm just playing.
No, you didn't replace me.
Hey, So I want to talk about this interest rates, man. You know, we hear this interest rates are going up. And here's the reality. In 2022, I think they said the interest rates went up several times and four times in 2023. So many young people are moving back home because of inflation.
Yep.
Then you talk about student debt, and it's just making it almost impossible to have your own place if you're just now trying to leave the nest, and it could be real challenging.
Listen, right? I'm 40 and I want to move back home. It's rough out here.
I can't believe you said your age, man.
I didn't say the actual age. I just gave them a
okay. Yeah.
Roundabout.
But yeah, it is. It's tough out here, man. I'm looking at, you know, the price of rent, and not even talk about mortgage, you know, rates and mortgages in general. So
yeah, if that's even a possibility for some people nowadays.
That's right. That's right. And I may not have all the answers or facts, the technical knowledge, but I do know a lot of people who are just feeling the burn financially. And I know this is a Christian-based podcast, and some may say, well, why are they talking about money and all of that? But we've said that education, information, and inspiration was what the Unknown Preacher LA was about. So I indeed. Do think it's important. What are you going to say, Jackie?
I said, indeed, I agree with you.
Yeah, yeah. And what can be more informative and inspiring than financial guidance, right, and financial freedom?
Exactly.
Yeah. So what I do know, if you're stressed about debt, and a lot of people have questions, if you have kids, you may want to invest or leave them something. And the question is, what do you do?
Well, my backup plan is I call you. So I don't know anything besides that. That's plan A, B, and C.
You're going to be out of luck calling me, man.
Well, I know I'm going to be taking notes today because there's definitely stuff I can learn.
Yeah, because we have some special guests, man. I will tell you this. I met them at a financial workshop, and I was just so impressed. And I knew we had to put them on. So, ladies and gentlemen, I am so happy to introduce to you Money Coach of Money Empowered, Kiara Speed. And her father, James Speed, who's a retired executive, a private investor who serves on several boards. I just want to give you both a warm, warm welcome to the Unknown Preacher LA. How you doing?
Welcome and good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, welcome. Hey. We're glad to be here. Thank you for having us.
No, thank you both. I'm just so fortunate to have you both on. I just think it's so cool to have a father and daughter working on something that's just so important, man.
Yes, absolutely. But it didn't really start this way. It was more of a father and, you know, a father and a daughter, you know, in teenage years struggling and kind of fighting with each other about finances, as I hear still that happens. But it's amazing how things work out, isn't it?
It sure is. And I'm sorry, Mrs. B, were you going to say something?
And Pastor, I joke about this, but it's a reality. I can remember when we did these kinds of workshops or seminars that I was the headliner. And yes, now that has reversed to the point that now my daughter is the headliner and I'm just her assistant.
Wow. The student becomes the teacher, right? That's awesome, you know. And, you know, I was mentioning earlier about this being Christian based, and, you know, the Bible says turn away from the idol of wealth, but prosperity can be a gift from God. And I just want to remind our listeners that power and wealth are from God and is to confirm his covenant. So this is so important. So I had to share that with our listeners to let them know. God is first, but God also supports your financial literacy. And Kiara, when we talked, you reminded me, you said this is what month?
It is financial literacy month.
That's right. That's so important. And so we want our listeners to establish and maintain money-making habits. But before we get into the financial piece, please tell us your stories. I've heard them. I just love hearing the stories. So I'm giving you the floor.
I'll let my dad go first, and then okay. I can follow.
Well, again, thanks for having us this morning. Yes, just to give the audience a little bit of my background, I grew up in a small town in North Carolina, and mostly what I saw growing up was most of the people in my neighborhood struggling financially. Yes. And some of the conversations that I was always hear from most of the people in the neighborhood was something that helped develop my mindset initially was that, you know, money didn't grow on trees. I remember my relatives would say when we would ask things, they would say, we can't afford this. Or I can remember one of the famous sayings, you must think we're the Rockefellers, those kind of things. And I saw one segment of our neighborhood who did well and the other segment who struggled. Mm-hmm. People who tended to do well were those that were educated. So at an early age, I understood that in order for me to have some kind of financial prosperity, I needed to be educated. And so I set out to do that by getting an undergraduate degree in accounting. I then furthered my education to get an MBA with a concentration in accounting, became a CPA, a certified public accountant, actually was employed by the largest accounting firm in the world, had graduated tops in my accounting class. And during the period of time when I worked with the largest accounting firm in the world, I encountered a young man that I supervised, and this young man was looking at the Wall Street Journal one day. Mm-hmm. And I asked Robert, I said, Robert, what are you doing? And he said, I'm looking up my mutual funds. And now keep in mind, CPA, well-educated, MBA, early 80s. And next question I asked, Robert, what's a mutual fund? And Robert explained to me what a mutual fund was. And I asked Robert, I said, Robert, how did you learn about mutual funds? And he said, my dad. Well, I felt a little bit embarrassed because with all the education I had in finances, I didn't know at that time, this was early on in the life of mutual funds. I didn't know what a mutual fund was. And I realized that that kind of education was great, but that education was not about my financial prosperity. And I began a quest to learn as much as I could, read all the books I could about my finances.
Yeah.
I also made a pledge that this would not happen in my family again. So I started teaching my daughter when she was about 4, 5, 6 years old about money. By the time she became a teenager, she said to herself, Dad, I don't want to hear about money anymore. Because that's all I talked about. But we were also laying the foundation for generational wealth and family prosperities. And through that process that I began at 26 years old, by the time I was 46, I had reached a point in my life where I actually quit work when my daughter was a sophomore in high school, and I did not return to work until she graduated from high school. And that was all because of putting a financial plan in place, developing a creative mindset about money, and then also learning how, you know, giving as it relates to the Bible, you know, God loves a cheerful giver.
Yes.
And then also one of the things I also remember in one of the scriptures, and it says, and this was, we're going to talk about this, how you grow your money. And it says a harvest size is established based on the seed that's planted. And that's a paraphrase of it in Corinthians. But anyway, I love doing this. I hope that we can help some people today, and most excited because my daughter also followed the path of which she would tell you her story.
Yes. Yes.
I know you're a proud father too.
Yeah.
You can tell that, particularly when we're doing, and it's great to be able to turn the program over to her and let her teach this, because it's really it's a product of some of my teaching, but also her tenacity and her willingness to also learn and now to teach others.
Wow. I so wish my mother or father had planted those seeds in me. So I know that Kiara appreciates that. Now, did you always appreciate that, Kiara?
No, as my dad said, not at all. I would always say, I don't want to hear any more about money. But I can attest to the fact that those seeds planted really took root, because even once I didn't want to hear any more, right? Once I got out into the, you know, quote unquote real world, life kind of hit me, right? I got out of college at the end of 2006. And so everybody knows, you know, the 2008 recessions and everything like that, people were really struggling. Yep. And throughout my life, what I have learned is that once you have that foundation, you can build upon that, but it might take some life lessons for it to hit you and for you to really lean into what information you know. So for me, you know, I got out of college. I have a dad who's a CPA. He's taught me about money. And I remember getting out of college and being like, I still don't really know a whole lot. I don't really understand what a 401k is. I don't understand really what stocks are. I just know you're supposed to do it. So I even remember talking to a lot of my friends, right? We all went to UNC Chapel Hill. It's a very good school. We're very smart and intelligent. And we didn't know what a lot of these money concepts were, not even, you know, insurance and things like that. We had no clue. So what I did is I got together with some of my friends actually in our early 20s and talked to my dad and said, hey, we don't really understand what any of this talks about. Could you help us to learn so that we can set ourselves up for financial success? And that's exactly what happened. So for a couple of years, probably 3 to 4 years, every couple of months, we would come to my parents' house and we would learn things about money. Now, the first thing we learned was mindset. And that wasn't really fun because we wanted to learn how to become millionaires. We wanted to learn how to ball out. We wanted to learn
how to. That's the hardest part.
Exactly, right? He just kept pressing and pressing mindset. But do you know that's the thing that has kept us going? Even for myself, going through being let go from jobs, I've gone through infertility, I've gone through divorce. And through all of that, what remained was my knowledge and management understanding of my finances. And that helped carry me through very difficult times, very emotional times, where you don't want really not to know about your money at those points. Because if you don't know about money or how to manage your money at those types of situations, it can make the situation much harder.
It does.
So for myself, that's kind of why I became a money coach. I went through all of these seasons in my life and I realized my knowledge and management of money really helped me through. And I wanted to educate other people on how to go through life transitions and life changes, but still not have stress about their money. And that's where Money Empowered was born.
Wow.
I'm thankful that you two aren't keeping it to yourself, because we definitely need to each one teach one.
Mm-hmm. Amen to that, man. Now, how long did this transition take here? You're talking about peaks and valleys. How long was this going on?
I mean, this has gone since starting from the kind of the first job I was let go of. That was in my early 20s to now, the same as you, Jackie. I just turned 40 in December. So this has been a journey over some decades. I went through an infertility process that was about 3 years long. I've been divorced now for about 4 years. So there have been some stretches that were, for me, difficult. And just setting my finances up to where that could help me and kind of take me to the next season was imperative. It was absolutely necessary. So
I imagine it being bittersweet, as far as whenever you're thinking about stuff that you're going through, it could be devastating, but there is reassurance that I'm not having to worry about this particular portion, because that portion, once you're out of it, you're behind. Correct. And then that's a whole nother anxiety. So
correct. Absolutely. And finances are one of the most stressful things for people. So if that's something that you don't have to worry about as much, it takes a heavy load off of you to focus on what you need to focus on, which is yourself and getting through those seasons.
So true.
And Pastor, even though you'll notice that Kiara is real, real humble, she never likes to talk too much about herself. But even going through that process and those struggles, and she's 40 now, but she was also able to leave work and become independent at age 37.
I was just about to ask, because I knew that you were able to separate from work, and you know, you had set yourself up financially. I wasn't certain about Kiara, but father like daughter, because you're as humble as well. But so you both have really obtained financial freedom, right?
Yes, we have. Yeah,
that is so, God is so good. So where does one start? Going to a financial advisor, like if I'm trying to get myself together, what course of action would you recommend from the very beginning? How do I start?
Well, one thing I just want to make a differentiation about, and financial advisor and financial coach, they are different. So as a financial coach, I really help people with their day-to-day money management, eliminating debt and setting up goals and setting up budgets. And financial advisors can do that as well, but they are also looking at a lot of your portfolios, your investments, and they can help you put your money somewhere. I guide people on what to do, but that, you know, financial advisors also have extended, I've taken certifications to become a money coach, but they have extended education to be able to talk to people and really put their money to work in specific investments. So for me as a money coach, what I start with people is really determining where you are, right? Yeah. You can't know where you're going unless you know where you are. So that's where we start. And really that what that entails is what's called a personal financial statement, or some people call it a net worth statement. And it's really simple. You can literally get out a piece of paper and really just pull up all of your accounts. You want to just see everything you own. So that could be like a house, if you have a mortgage, that could be a car, that could be your savings accounts, your checking accounts. And then you want to subtract everything you owe. Now, everything you owe could be anything from different loans, like your car loan, your mortgage loan.
It could be your phone bill.
Your student loans, your credit card debt, things like that. And you want to see, is that number zero? Is that number above zero, below zero? Just so you can get a sense of where you stand. And what I also suggest for people is to track that once or twice a year, so that you know that you're moving in a direction that gets you to your financial goals. But that really is the first step, determining where you are. And Dad, you can kind of talk about the next steps too.
Yeah, and when you talk about where you are, to me, that's very, very important, because I was working with a young man just recently, and I was just asking him the questions. I said, well, how much do you owe? And he said, well, I owe X number of dollars on my American Express card. And he went through, and then I said, what else? And then he said, that's all. And then I would ask him another question. He said, oh yeah, I have a student loan. So this is important, because you can't determine where you're going if you don't know where you are. Yeah. And I do the analogy of, if you got in your car today and you wanted to go to Richmond, and you asked your GPA, tell you where you're going. Well, you got to, first of all, say where you are. So that's, if right, I'm in Raleigh, or if I'm in Durham, or wherever it might be, I got to start from here. That's the same thing with this personal financial statement. It just gives you a glimpse in one page, very, very simple, of where you are. And then once you determine where you are, now you can decide, okay, where is it that I want to go? Mm-hmm. I always say that next step that Carol was talking about would be step two, would basically be, now I have to create my goals. Yes. And we should have goals. I would say a 12-month goal, or like a 3-year goal and a 5-year goal. But I don't want you to concentrate as much on a 5-year goal, because sometimes you can get lost in that fray because so many things change and so many unknowns. I want you to concentrate on those next 6 to 12 months. And there are certain things that you do, but we want you to establish some goals. And I always say, you have to write those goals down. You have to put a date on it, because if you don't put a date on a goal, it becomes a wish. So please put those goals down. Now, when we talk about what those goals should be, Kiara, I'll turn that back here and say, what should some of those goals be for a person who now understands where we are, and now you've written some goals down, and they need to be your goals, not someone else's goals, because sometimes I'll meet people and they say, well, I want to have a BMW. And I would say, well, why do you want a BMW? And really what it is that they want the BMW because they have a friend who wants a BMW and they think they need to have a BMW. But that really doesn't bring them any joy, any value by doing that. It has to be your goals, and you own it, And don't let other people dictate what that should be for you, because your goals are your goals and no one else's.
Thank you.
Being those goals, Kiara.
Yeah, absolutely.
I imagine they would have to be realistic too, right? Because that's one big thing. Like, even like you said with the BMW, is like the Benz, people are just like, well, I want to be rich. You know, we made a whole song about it. So it's like, you know, people really do need to make sure within those parameters that it's realistic that you can do it.
But you say you want to be rich, but for most people who are wealthy and rich, they're not driving Mercedes. They're not driving the nice cars. They're not living in the biggest houses. If you read about wealth in some of these books that change your mindset, you can see that a lot of everyday people are millionaires that you never know about. But as we talk about those goals and what those goals should be, one of those goals should be that I develop a emergency fund, because sometimes people want to start investing and so forth. But the first thing I want you to do is establish an emergency fund. And that emergency fund, I tell people to start with just $1,000. If they could just save $1,000 for an emergency. Now, that doesn't mean that $1,000, that emergency fund, is going to be if the girlfriends call up and they want to go to the beach for the weekend. You know, that's not an emergency. Or you know, we want to do something else or go to a, those not an emergency. These emergencies would be if my car broke down, because the reason I want an emergency fund is I don't want necessarily to have to use a credit card that we'll talk about in a minute. But the first thing is establish that emergency fund, and let's have a goal of $1,000 with that emergency fund. And Kiara, I'll let you kind of kick in with some other items.
Well, I was just going to say too, to that, for some people, they can easily just pick into that emergency fund, right? So I tell people, put it in, you know, another savings account at another bank, at an online, you know, high yield online savings account, so that you can't easily tap into it. Because how many people know, even especially today, it's like going to that brunch, right? Sunday brunch, that's an emergency. If I can't handle that, let me go ahead and do that. If I need to go on that girls trip, like my dad said, let's go and do, no. If you can't get to the money for a couple of days, normally what will happen is you'll be able to reevaluate and say, this isn't an emergency, so let me just keep it there. Yeah. So that's very, very important. And I would say that a lot of the things that are most unexpected are under that $1,000. A lot of those happen to be like car things that come up, you know, the tire blows, or I get into, you know, a little fender bender, and that can happen at any point. But that can really sidetrack your finances if you don't have that in place. So make sure that you have that $1,000. And eventually what we want you to do, depending on how stable your job is to get up to 3 to 6 months of that. And that's not necessarily 3 to 6 months of your paycheck. That is 3 to 6 months of your expenses. So we want to make sure that you still have a roof over your head, you have food in your belly, and you have clothes on your back for you and your family. So whatever those expenses are, we want to make sure that you have the 3 to 6 months of those, because anything can happen, right? Especially in COVID, what we saw is everything seemed to be going well. And then COVID happened and jobs went immediately. Yeah. And if you were not prepared for that, what are you going to do, right? The government did come in and kind of help people, but we've been there before. What I wanted people to know now is, now that you know something that unexpected can take place, go ahead and be prepared before you have to get prepared. So that's important.
But also at the center of the goals. So we mentioned determining where you are, and we just talked about emergency fund. But emergency fund is really going to be a subset of the biggest item that I would say is part of that, a part of those goals. And the next one would be developing a spending plan. Now, some people call it a budget, but after you determine where you are, let's now establish a spending plan or a budget. And that is so imperative because of the fact that most people think that all I have to do is just make more money and my problems go away. But because of the habits that we have, more money just means a bigger problem than you had before, because you're doing the same things with more money.
That's right.
So the first thing we have to do is establish a budget or a spending plan where we talk about how much money is coming in, how much money is going out. And you need to do that budget based on where you are right now, what's coming in and what's going out. And there's two things going to happen. You're either going to have more money going out than you have coming in. Now, where I grew up, we used to always say you had more month than you had money. So, you know, when you get to the 15th of the month,
yes,
your money's run out, but you still got bills. That's where you got more month than you have money. So the only way I solve that problem is to find out, how do I make more money, or how do I reduce the expenses that I have? But that is so imperative that you must do. I know people hate doing it. It doesn't have to be restrictive, but it is a key part of that. And one of those subsets will be of doing that budget is putting in those budgets and having that emergency fund, but also something that Kiara talks about a lot, and you can expound on that now, is when you're doing that spending plan, how can I make some of those things automatic? How do I incorporate paying off my credit card? Because paying off credit cards should also be one of the big things. But if you want to talk a little bit about making some of those expenditures that you have and income items, how do you make them kind of automatic to be able to build wealth along the way?
Well, the important thing that comes around automation is that you don't have to actually think about it. Once you've put it in place, mm-hmm. it just sets you up for success. So for instance, I talk to people a lot who they may, for instance, have a 401k, and maybe they go ahead and say, I want my 401k, the money in my 401k to come out of my, you know, checking account every month. Mm-hmm. Now, once that happens, they're not missing that, right? They don't even know that it comes in. It doesn't even come into their account. But what are they doing? They're putting themselves first by making sure that their future self is going to be able to do exactly what they want, to live the dreams that they want. So automation is really, really important. So not just even for your retirement, but like my dad said, for credit cards. And I give a story, because last year I was just doing my credit card statements and I was just paying it off at the end of the month, mm-hmm. and I would keep up with it. Well, December came, it was my birthday, it was the holidays. I just completely forgot to pay the bill. This happens, right? Like, we all make mistakes. I'm a money coach. I tell people, I've made all the mistakes you've made. This is why I'm a coach and I can help you, right? Mm-hmm. So I forgot to make the payment. But what I did after that was, the lesson was learned. And so I just put that thing on automatic. I just said, every 27th of the month, that money is going to come out. It's going to make sure, and especially for credit cards, because credit card interest rate is so exceptionally high. Yes. We know that the average interest rate is something like 24%, but now it's growing, right? It's going up to like 28, 29, 30%. So for every $1,000 that you are spending, if you're not paying that off, you're actually going to be having to spend an extra $300 just for the purchases that you've made if you don't pay that off, because you're paying the interest. So especially for that one, make that thing automatic. Absolutely do like the minimum, but if you can do more, do that. And ultimately you want to pay that off at the end of every month. But automation just helps your life, because it's one less thing you actually have to think about. And for those of you who are, you know, in high demand jobs, you might have families that you're worried about. You're worried about a lot of other things. If you can just go ahead and make that automatic, that is just something off your plate. So that's the easiest thing to do within your budget. And I know that, Dad, you talked about budgets and being restrictive. When I work with people, I also talk about the psychology of money. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's where budgets have gotten a bad rap, right? We talk about like restriction. We can't do what we want to do. I tell people that one part of personal finance is having to retrain your mind to think differently. That's right. I would say a budget is not restriction. A budget is simply a plan that allows you to tell your money how to work for you. And you get to choose that. If you want to have, you know, a lot of money going to eating out, within reason, within your budget, you can do that. Whereas somebody else might say, that's not really important to me. I don't care about eating out, but I do care about traveling. So I'm going to put more money towards that. And that's what I call really values-based budgeting. When you're set your budget around the things that bring you true joy, that bring you true peace, the things that you enjoy, you actually find more enjoyment out of doing a budget. So whether that is, like I said, traveling, eating out, shopping, charity work, giving back to your church, you can put all of those into your budget. I literally have a line item in my budget that says fun money. Every month I put aside something for myself that I can just do whatever I want with.
Yes.
And that makes it a lot easier to keep up, not only keep up with your budget, but enjoy making sure that you can enjoy today and enjoy tomorrow because you're putting your money to work for you.
Now, Ms. Kara, I wanted to ask you, when it comes to credit cards, are you ever supposed to pay them all the way off? Because, you know, some people use different apps and it'll tell you like what to do. Like you want to keep like about what 30%, it would say. What is your suggestion on that?
My suggestion is always pay the credit card off every month. What that is, even though we're talking about like credit utilization and you want that to stay under 30%, your credit score will still grow and or stay high if you just put one or two things and make it automatic so that it shows that it's actually using your credit card. I just find that for a lot of people, that's a slippery slope. So if you're continuously running up your credit card bill, one, you're going to keep having to pay that interest. And I don't want to pay someone more money for something that I've already purchased. So I'm only trying to pay $100 for a $100 item. I'm not trying to pay, you know, $130 for a $100 item. So I always say pay it off every month. I would say to watch out for like closing a credit card because that can absolutely decrease your credit score. But I would say if you put, some people just put their bit like their water bill or their, you know, energy bill on a credit card and make sure it's paid off every month so that it can continue to show that you are using your credit card, but that you're not going to be paying extra interest and you're not going to get in trouble. For instance, if you miss a payment and now that interest rate skyrockets or you get penalized.
And if you think about it, how do you think that the credit cards have these great big buildings that they have? The reason is because you're paying 30% interest rate. So why not build your own building versus building their building? And what does it say in the Bible? That the borrower is servant to the lender. That is really true when you think about a credit card. Mm-hmm. When I was speaking with a young man that this past week, and he had about $5,000 in his savings account, but he owed $1,500 on his credit card bill. Mm-hmm. And he was paying, what do you think he was paying? The minimum payment.
$200 a month.
Yeah. Minimum payment, and his minimum payment was not enough to cover the interest that he was being charged. And he couldn't understand why his balance was growing every month. So I asked him the question. I said, the savings account that you have, are you earning more than 30% in your savings account? And he said, no, sir, I'm not. I said, well, why wouldn't you just take the $1,500 out of your savings account, move that and pay the credit card off so that you're, and now the interest that you're earning is your money and not having to take that money to pay the credit card company. And that is why they will increase your limit. That is why they will a lot of times send you card promotions when you get on the plane. Before you get off the plane, they're trying to entice you to get one of their cards so you can get miles and so forth. And those are good in certain circumstances. But for most people, they're not really able to handle that credit card because that credit card is really an extension of not managing your money. So if you do your budget, you don't have enough income to cover your expenses. Well, one of the ways I can do that is I can just use my credit card now because I'm not concerned about the balance of the interest rate. I'm always concerned about what is that minimum payment. That's the wrong way to look at it.
Yes.
I remember starting college and it was like that. Like before we even walk into like the common area with all the food, they had like tables set up outside with credit cards. I was like, oh, okay. And I actually signed up for one. It was a gas card. And it was like, it definitely put me in the hole because even though the minimum was $10 and it was like a $300 limit, it took me forever to finally get back right with it because I think we take it as accomplishment. Like, oh, they're giving us a credit card. They up our limit, but it's just dangling a carrot in order to trap us. And you got to be able to realize that and be able to be smarter about it.
Right. And they're doing that. They were doing that at our time to 18-year-olds who didn't know anything about money management.
Exactly.
And it's so funny because I was actually talking to a couple of my friends a few weeks ago about that exact same thing. And one of my friends said he literally signed up for a credit card to get a college t-shirt and a free, like a Miami Subs gift card. And it was like, And of course, what do college students want? Free clothes and free food. So they knew exactly what to do.
Exactly.
Yeah, but
matter of fact, know how to pitch it.
Fact, we were talking about credit cards. And last month, Kara and I had the opportunity to speak to a group of college students at UNC about what they needed to do to prepare for graduation and their first job. Mm-hmm. And we talked about the credit cards, and there were several students in the audience that had already been receiving credit cards because they were in the process of graduating.
Yeah.
And it's like they all sense it. As soon as you sign up for one, you get like 10 other ones in the mail from different companies.
Mm-hmm. And but a couple other things that should be on that goal sheet. We mentioned now, you know, turning your financial status, knowing where you are, mm-hmm. putting together a financial plan and the budget. And included in that budget to me should be, and this is just personal to me, a couple of things. And when I start thinking about what is the first item that I have, if you look on my budget, and I'm sure on Kiara's budget, if you look on those budgets, the first thing I have is giving. Tithes and offerings or giving is my first line item.
Amen.
It's because I know the promise of what takes place when I tithe, and there'll be overflowing that I can't overflow, that I can't even imagine or handle myself. The next thing is as Kiara indicated, is the next line item is pay yourself. So a portion of what I earn, and there's a book called The Richest Man in Babylon, and in one of the first principles in that book, it says a portion of all I earn is mine to keep. So the first thing is pay yourself. So mm-hmm. out of every paycheck, if it's $5, this is $10, just save something and make it automatic so that that takes place. And the next thing, if you're working, mm-hmm. the next thing you do is go ahead and set aside money for your 401k or your Roth IRA. And I always tell people, in most organizations, your company will match your money. And a lot of times they'll match 100% of your first 6%. I ask people, because most people who come to us says, we want to learn how to invest. And the first thing we say is, do you have an emergency fund? Are you funding your 401k? And the answer is a no. And we said, we can't invest right now. Yeah. Put the money in your 401k and you actually invest. One of the things I know is, and I've run these numbers 1,000 times, if a person is starting out of college, 20 years old, and you put about $190 a month in an index fund, we'll talk about those later, index fund, you could be a millionaire in 40 years. Now you could say that's a long time, but we're only talking $190. So the next thing is fund your 401k to the extent that you get a match on those 401ks. And then those other things would be those fixed expenses like your rent and or your mortgage, all the other, your electric bill, utility bill. And then those other things that you desire, like eating out and those things, they're going to have less priority over those fixed things that you have to have. But I would also say, put your money, let your money reflect those values that you have and those things that are important to you. Mm-hmm. And Kiara has actually taught me, because even though I had attained a certain level of financial security, I still had that mindset from being a young guy when I would ask my dad for money and they never had money. So I thought I always had to save my money. And even though I did things that I really enjoyed, I'm at another level of putting my money on those things that I really enjoy and not spend money on, like, I love travel. I could care less about eating out at fancy restaurants. So I spend more money on travel and eat less in restaurants to offset that. And Kiara, you can talk about some of that, and particularly about how you save your money in your buckets.
Yes. What you are referring to is my high yield savings account. So these have garnered a lot more kind of notoriety, and people know a lot more about them over the past probably decade or so. But especially as the interest rates were starting to go up, the high yield savings accounts, because they're not a brick and mortar bank like the banks that you see, you know, just locally in your area, they don't have that. So they don't have all of that overhead. So they can move some of that money to being useful for their clients and their members. And so what you'll see is, I tell people, especially for those, we were talking about goals, for those goals that are more short term, maybe 3 years or under, things, for instance, like if you're saving up for a house, you don't want to put that into the stock market, right? And you never know what's going to happen to it. So you want that to be pretty secure. But you also don't want it to just be in a bank getting, you know, 0.01%. It's doing nothing for you.
Right.
So I suggest high yield savings accounts, at least at this time, because they're garnering 4 to 5+%. So you can actually just put it in there. And what my dad was talking about, buckets, is certain online savings accounts will have certain things. Some are called buckets, vaults, but you can actually go ahead and set up your specific goals and make sure you attain those. So you can say, you know, I do the same for our Christmas budget. We all know Christmas is coming around every December 25th, but it's almost like it's always a surprise to people. Like, oh my goodness, Christmas happened and I didn't even know it was going to be here, right? No, it happens every year. So you can save for that. So if you wanted, for instance, $1,000 for Christmas, you could literally every month just save $100. Don't make it something that has to be, you know, overly complicated. $100 a month is $25 a week. You just set that aside. And if you put it in a high yield savings account, that money is still growing for you. But you can set it to say, I want $1,000 by, you know, November 1st, because we got to make sure that we can get the gifts for Christmas. And you can put that in every month. And what it allows you to do is see your progress. Because I know for myself, I'm not sure about other people, but when I see my progress taking place, whether that is something visually or like a chart, it actually motivates me more. So why not go ahead and set up different areas? That could be Christmas, that could be travel, that could be education, that could be saving for a home, saving for a car, and really seeing your money grow. It gets you excited. It lets you know that I'm doing something for my future, for myself, and that I can do this. A lot of people sometimes say, I've never been able to even save for this, but being able to see that progress really inspires me, you know? Yeah. So there are things now that are created for our success. We just have to utilize them.
Okay. Wow, I'm sorry, Ms. Wall, do you want to say something?
No, go ahead, Jackie.
Okay. So I'm gonna give you a little bit about me. I am struggling like when it comes to the food part, because sometimes people look, I don't have anywhere to move anything. So budgeting, you know, it's like you said, your mindset. I'm thinking, you know, go to fast food. It's quicker and grocery stores are getting higher and it's probably about the same. But I didn't realize it until me being older, I have to, in order for me to know that I'm going to live longer, I have to be able to do better with my body. So I'm going to the grocery store and I'm realizing that it is so much cheaper to make your stuff and it actually lasts longer, you know, if you make a meal. But, you know, you've got to be able to do the research. And then it also takes you knowing which grocery stores to look at, because, you know, some of them, they have it set up where it's convenient and it's not really a convenience whenever you look at it on paper.
Wow. And some people think that there's kind of like the hierarchy of grocery stores, but every grocery store has healthy options that you can look, like you said, research. They all have healthy options that you can find. You just have to look for them a little bit. And we all know, especially, I think we were talking yesterday, Dad, you just went to a fast food place and spent $10. So it's not that fast food now is cheaper. It's fast food is also expensive now. So it's expensive and unhealthy. So
that's right.
Choose your options.
But Jackie, that's where your goals come in. Because now think about this. If I have a goal that I want to have $300, $500, $1,000 in my emergency fund savings. And now if I'm monitoring this, knowing where I am, and I know I have $500 and I got another 3 months to save some more, then some of these choices I have will be drawn by my goals and trying to accomplish those goals. So as a result of that, I might say, well, I can get closer to that goal that I'm committed to, that I have a date on, if I don't go to the fast food, but eat at home for 3 or 4 days a week versus going out. But still, you still want to reward yourself. So you still want to go out every now and then, but don't do that every day. And goals can do some amazing things, because you are shooting towards something. In particular, when you have an accountability partner, someone else who knows your goal and holding you accountable is very important. But I also tell you, be careful who you share your goals with, because everyone doesn't have the same respect for those goals that you have.
Right.
So if people are not aligned with the things that you're trying to do, don't share those goals, because I can tell you, everybody won't be as inspired by your goals as you will.
Yes.
Right.
Thank you for sharing that. And so, Jackie, we're going back to Hot Pockets when we record now. So no more meals. But I'm glad Jackie brought that up, because as you all were talking and you were saying the emergency fund and $1,000, and I have some friends and I know would say, I don't have $1,000. But if you look deep enough, and like mm-hmm. you said, you cut off those meals going out. And I share with you all that my mother, you know, she didn't really teach me about being financially stable or secure, but she did. I remember when I had my first real job, and she said, how often are you going out to eat? And I was like, every day. And she said, add that. Now I'm 19 years old. She said, add that up in a week. And then she said, now in a month. And I remember like, wow, it was aha moment. And I knew then, like, man, we spend a great deal of money going out to eat. And I was fortunate to, you know, have that lesson taught to me at 19. And then I remember when I was in my early 20s, and there was this 63-year-old woman who was working at a grocery store, and she got off, and I walked her to her car because it was late, and she took the time to tell me to be smart with my money. Mm. And she said, I have to work. I remember her saying that, I'm 63 years old and I have to work. And she said she was basically living her best life at a young age and just having a ball, going out, spending money. And now she's, you know, in on the later part of life and forced to work. So fortunate for me, God put so many different people in place in my life to kind of, and trust me, it's still room to grow for me, but I'm in a much better place than I could have been if those people hadn't taken the time to, you know, guide me.
And definitely,
and that you had taken the time to listen too, because people, like I said, people, my dad put seeds in me, but until it was time for me to live in the real world and actually understand, right, that didn't hit me as much. So just kudos to you for actually listening and implementing. That's a huge part, because you're in control of that.
Thank you. So what about your customers? Are you getting pushback when you, I'm just imagining some of the facial expressions when you say, hey, you need to put $1,000 aside for emergency fund. And what kind of feedback do you get from your average mm-hmm. customer when you sit down and, you know, lay down this plan for them?
Well, when they come to me, they're usually in a place where they feel a lot of discouragement, a lot of shame, a lot of guilt. I know that when I talk to people, at least the first time, a lot of what they say is like, I'm really bad with money. I know I should be doing better. Yes. And I've wasted so much time. And so I always want to dispel those kind of thought processes. Right. Mm-hmm. I don't believe anybody is bad with money. Right. We've all made mistakes.
Yes.
And you don't know what you don't know. So give yourself grace and kind of self-forgiveness and understanding that if you knew something different, then you would have done something different. You didn't. So now that you know something different, you can move forward, and let's let that go. Secondly, when people say, you know, I've wasted a lot of time, I believe that everybody gets it when they're supposed to. So even if you're like someone myself who is 40, people say I might have already been working for 20 years and I haven't gotten this retirement number and saved this amount of money. But it's like, you still have 20 to 25 years that you can still work and you can still put that money away. And that's a long time. So let's not think about what we haven't done. Let's think about what we can do. And so it's really starting that mindset process of really letting go of the guilt, letting go of the shame, right? You're not a bad person because you haven't done X, Y, Z with your money. You're learning and you're able to do something different now for yourself and for your family and for your, you know, your community, your legacy. So really the biggest part is that mindset aspect of let's frame this now about what we're going to do to move forward. But especially when you get to the saving for the $1,000 or more, some people have never even done that. They've never even seen that. And a lot of what we do is what is modeled, right? So if we never saw our parents save $1,000, it's a lot harder for us to believe that we can too, which is why I come in, right? I'm a coach. I can guide you and be an accountability and help you create a plan. And so I think once people have the steps, once they say, oh, there's someone to give me steps, I have hope. And hope is the biggest thing, right? Especially with your money. Hope is the biggest thing. When you believe you can do it, it makes a world of difference. I know that there's like a quote that says, whatever we believe about ourselves and our abilities come true for us. So if you believe that you can do it and you have people behind you, accountability partners, you're surrounding yourself with other people who are on a similar journey, you really can reach those goals. You just have to believe it, starting with yourself, and then put the plan into place, like setting those goals, coming up with time frames to do them, and then just having the progress, setting up incremental goals to that big goal so that you believe it can be accomplished.
And yes. I would say too, I'm sorry, Jackie.
You're fine. Go ahead, sir.
Don't have this $1,000 set in your mind. Mm-hmm. That could be $300. That could $500. And the reason I say that is because there was a study done, and mm-hmm. I want to say they found out that if over 60% of Americans could not come up with $400 in the case of an emergency, over 60% of Americans. Wow. So it doesn't have to be $1,000. It could be $400 so that you don't fall in that category of that statistic.
Right.
But to Kiara's point, the mindset. And I would also say, don't beat yourself up for where you are right now. Mm-hmm. And I give an example, because just start where you are. I have some friends of mine that I went to high school with, and they are 70 years old like I am. And one of my friends was having a conversation with me about getting their finances. And his goal was to have his finances in order when he was 75 so that he wouldn't have to struggle as much financially. So what do? We're putting a plan in place for him for the next 5 years. Now, if he's not too late at 70, my God, someone who who is 30 or 40 or 50 or 60. And I would say if you were 75, let's put your plan together to make sure that by the time you're 80, I mean, our life expectancy is increasing. You still can have a good life. And it's about making money. There are 22 million millionaires in this country. And the majority of them never made a six-figure income. They just saved. Now, savings won't do it. Saving and investing, like we're talking about in 401ks and so forth and so on, they're not the top executives who are all these millionaires that you see on TV and so forth. These are people who diligently saved and invested, put money in their 401ks, and did these things that we're talking about on a continuous basis. But also invest in yourself. Because one of my favorite guys always says that the biggest investment that you can make is an investment in yourself. And he also had a quote to say, says work harder on yourself than you do on your job. So when we talk about working hard on ourselves, we're talking about self-improvement. We're talking about getting these kinds of lessons on YouTube and getting these reading books and TV shows. It's everywhere today teaching us how to be able to do these things. So take an interest in doing this. So I do this more now than I watch NFL football, even though I really like it, or NBA basketball. I take the time and keep educating myself on how do I get better.
Wow. I don't think, I hope they do, but I don't think our listeners know how valuable this piece was today, because we talked before this interview and it was, we're going to do this 30,000 feet in the air overview, and we're going to, you know, just talk about your story and a few tips here and there, but the knowledge you guys just shared with our listeners is so invaluable, because like I said, I met them at a financial workshop, and they are paid to do this. They're giving you this information. And so please, I hope you all listen and take advantage of it, because it's for you. It's going to help you. And you talk about generational wealth and investing in yourself and in your families. Let me ask you this, because I always hear back and forth, married couples, should they have joint checking accounts or separate accounts? I always get that question. What would you all say?
Well, for doing this for a long time, I can tell you what, I tried both ways. I've tried when my wife and I got married, because we didn't know any better, because no one's kind of taught us about financial literacy, and you kind of model what you see. And most of the families that we knew, you know, you had the spouse, the husband had an account and the wife had an account, and one person might have paid the mortgage payment, another payment, And I can remember when we used to try to pay separate bills because that's what we saw other people do, right?
Right.
And it was, to me, it was a mess.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what we did. We said, okay, what? And this is what I just had this conversation with another couple not long ago, is to let's have a joint account. And that joint account represents a household account. Gotcha. And then you still have your separate account. So let's say one person makes $40,000 and another person makes $30,000. You still put your money in the account together, and then in your separate accounts, just like a bill, let's say each person got $700 a month in their personal account.
Mm-hmm.
All the other money stays in the household account. So mortgages, rents, car payments, insurance, groceries, everything came out of that household account, and you knew what was in that account. In your individual account, that was go out to lunch, do your own thing. You didn't have to be accountable to anyone, but the focus was on this joint account that we did investments out of, and everything came out of that one account, and there was accountability there, but also didn't have to be accountable, because most couples, they're worrying about, well, this person makes more than I make, so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't get you to the common goal if you're trying to generate some form of wealth, because first of all, you're not doing it together. And then the second thing is you can't keep up with it. We had separate checkbooks. We couldn't tell what was due. We didn't know what was due, when it wasn't due. To me, it's just a mess without having at least one central account that everything can be paid out of.
Mm-hmm. Man,
I would agree. Yeah, I would say to at least have a joint account. Maybe some people want to put all of their accounts together. That's mm-hmm. fine. Or some people want a joint account with separate accounts. I would just say, don't just solely have separate accounts. And I think that one of the couples that I've worked with before, they came into a marriage a little later on in life. They both had children, and so they were just doing things separately. So they didn't know when one person was spending this or that, and you know, especially for a lot of women too, women might have been through cases of financial abuse, and they just feel like, I need to have my own stash. I don't feel safe because of things that have happened in the past. But I would also say that once that couple started having a joint account, now they still had separate accounts because she liked to shop and he liked to, you know, buy stocks and buy games, and they could both do those things. But once they got on the same page about their household, it was mm-hmm. amazing how much faster they started paying off debt. They started creating, they both like to travel, so they started a travel fund, and now they've been able to go on all these vacations. They were just able to come together and put their goals together and know what each other's goals were, and their household has functioned a lot smoother, and they've been able to reach a lot of those goals a lot faster. So knowing what the other person is very beneficial for your entire kind of marriage. And I think that today there are a lot of tools that can help that, right? We talk about budgeting apps, and some apps people mm-hmm. have heard about, like Every Dollar or YNAB or Rocket Money. But there are actual like apps like Honeydew that help couples, like an app that helps couples with their finances together. So there are a lot of ways to really help you budget and work together on your finances these days too.
And each one of you, each person also has their own like investment accounts. And the reason I say this is mm-hmm. because you're putting into this joint account what is your net pay. Mm-hmm. Well, normally if you are funding your 401ks or your Roth IRAs or your 403Bs or 457s of those funds, you know, that money has already come out. So each person still has his or her own individual investment accounts as it relates to their retirement and so forth. But then all the other bills and so forth going into that joint account, just it is magical. And I see the people who do this, and I see the people who don't, and there's really, really, really no comparison.
Wow.
Yeah.
But some people, but you know, that's difficult for some people, because you might have one person who's a spender mm-hmm. and one person who's a and now how do you have a meeting of the minds, if you will, when those individuals don't see money the same way. That's when you have to talk about money. And one of the things about it is, just like religion, we don't talk about religion. We normally don't talk about money.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So that's kind of one of those taboo subjects that people don't want to talk about. And it needs to be talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Preach. And they said that's another reason for divorce. Oh, go ahead, Jackie.
I was going to say, I noticed one thing, like on Amazon and in different places, PayPal, it lets you do the payment over time. And people are getting excited about that now because it's like, oh, I can get everything now. And then I can just pay it over every 2 weeks. And it's like, that's leeway. They're like, no, it's not. It's for pay or something. It's like, no, that. And what is the money going to be there? It's like, I don't know, but I get everything now and I don't have to pay for all of it right now. It's like, you got to be very careful with that. And people don't use checkbooks anymore. So it's, you know, it's definitely going to be a challenge if you don't have control and then also be able to know when to indulge and when not to.
Jackie, there are penalties that come across that come along with that if you don't pay on time or if you don't pay certain things. Mm-hmm. I say it's like my dad said about credit cards. Like if people are making money off of this, they're going to continue to do it. So if they weren't making money by you having payment installments and doing and getting all your stuff now and paying later, they wouldn't do it. So they are. So it's not benefiting you more than it's benefiting them. So just know that.
But Jay, you probably heard the old saying, the more things change, the more they stay the same. Yep. What you described is when we were kids, our parents for our Christmas, they would go to the store and it costs $100. They may pay $20, you know, and we call that the layaway. Mm-hmm. So all it is now is old school is layaway. That's what it is. But when we got our toys, our parents didn't owe any more money because they couldn't get it out of the layaway until you pay it off.
Wow. Man, any final thoughts? I know we're closing up, but this has been so impactful. I really appreciate this knowledge you two are shared. And I'll say this. I remember we talked before this interview and Mr. Speed, you say good people with money do good things. So this could help on so many levels, not just in your home, but helping others. And so, wow, what you guys did today, I can't thank you enough. Any final thoughts, anything else you want to share? Or do you have a question you want to ask Jackie before we wrap things up?
We did hit on the married couples, but like for the single people, I'm a single mother. You know, my daughter is older now where she's able to do for herself, but what is some advice you can give for single parents or just people that are single in order to set themselves up and their future family?
Well, I would say the same steps that we talked about are the same steps that I would say. Determine where you are, set your goals, and make sure you create a plan, especially as a single parent. I'm a single mom as well with the son, a five-year-old. And so, right, you don't have a two-income household. So it seems like your money's not going as far, but every little bit counts. So you'll see that if you just put away a little bit at a time, it will grow. And so knowing that, and I think especially as a parent, modeling what you want your children to see too is important. And when I say modeling, it's not necessarily just like, this is how you plan a budget or this is what you do. That just them seeing you plan a vacation or helping to plan with that helps their money mindset, helps their understanding of how money works. Or even, you know, when they get in their first job, maybe you can say, oh, you know what? Now that I have more financial literacy, I know that because you have a job, you can go ahead and set up a Roth IRA for yourself, even if you're 17 years old. And that gets them on the path to being better at their finances than maybe you were, or even discussing with them your mistakes. Because a lot of times, you know, that is the most important thing. I think you were saying, Pastor, that's kind of what you heard those people say, man, I wish I would have done this when I was younger. And they talk to you about their mistakes in hopes that you wouldn't make them and you learn from them. So modeling and just setting an example of just a little bit at a time does work and it does help. Mm-hmm. You might not think it does, but when you look up in 2, 5, 10 years, it will have made a difference and you will have set yourself up and your kids up for financial success.
But I love that. I love that question, Jackie, that you asked, particularly around kids. And I have a lot of stories, but I have stories in particular, because it's not just for you to understand how money works. It's never too soon to start teaching your daughter about money. Right. Let me give you an example. I remember when Kiara was younger, she was off to school. A couple of kids were getting allowances. She came home and asked, Dad, why I'm not getting an allowance? I said, well, go to school, ask these kids what they get allowances for. And she came back and they were getting allowances for cleaning up their rooms, you know, taking the trash out. And I told Kiara, well, you do that because you live in my house. But one of the things that we can, is I can pay you for doing some work. So yeah. One summer when she was 12, she became the household bookkeeper. And what she had to do is she had to write out all the checks for the mortgage, for the electric bill. At 12 years old, she already knew how to post the budget and so forth. Now, she didn't pick up a lot of those skills, but one of the things she's very good at today is doing a budget and taking care of household expenses, because she started doing that at 12 years old. Now, the next thing is her son. One of the things in a book called The Richest Man in Babylon, he talks about how to allocate money. Mm-hmm. And so we have four jars. We went to the dollar store, got four jars. And on the jar, one has 10% giving, 10% savings, 10% investing, 70% spending. And so if her son gets, let's say, a dollar, he puts 10 cents, 10 cents, 10 cents, 70 cents. So as a result, he's already learning that you can't spend all your money.
Yeah.
We go to Disney a couple of years ago. He empties the jar out and he goes to Disney with the 70%. And he goes in the store and he picks up about 10 different toys he wants to buy. And then he didn't have enough money to pay for it all. Well, I wanted to say, well, I'll pay the rest of it. But I said, no, I can't do that. Mm-hmm. So his mom said, you only have this money you have to buy. So he was learning, how do I put these things back? Because I can only spend what I have. Can't use a credit card. Now, this is for a five-year-old. But those were lessons that we learned from reading different books and so forth. But it's also teaching young people now and people in your life how they handle money at a very, very early age. Last thing I also want to say is, don't also understand how compounding works. Because if you are young, compounding is, as Albert Einstein said, was the eighth wonder of the world. But one thing he also said, the people who don't understand compounding pays interest. Those who understand it earn interest. Think about that. So if you understand, so if you are a young person, like I said, 20 years old, put $190 in your 401k in an index fund, let it compound, and you'll have $1 million just by putting on. You're not going to miss the $190. I don't care if you only make $25,000. Put it in. You won't miss it. But if you do that, make it automatic, forget about it, and you'll be amazed at the level of wealth you will have without ever earning huge salaries. Don't buy into the myth that you got to make a lot of money to eventually have money, but you do need time for it to grow. And right. You need to develop a very, very healthy mindset around money. It's not bad to have money, because everything we care about, don't care what it is, every person or everything you care about needs to have money. Your church needs money. Your church needs money. The non-for-profits needs money. The Salvation Army needs money. Habitat for Humanity, they all need money. So we can help if we can do good things with our money versus doing those destructive things. And just keep on learning and reading. It's not a bad thing to have money. But for bad people, or the love of money is the root of all evil.
Yes, it is.
Money was the root of all evil.
Yes, yes. You guys gave such a wonderful gift today. So I want to, again, just thank you. Wow, God, it's good. I hope that we can circle back in the near future, bring you guys on again, because I think what you're sharing is just so instrumental to the growth of our listeners. So thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us.
All right. Jackie, any final thoughts?
No, I just want to know, Ms. Kiara, do you already hear yourself sounding like your dad talking to your son?
I do, a little bit. It's a little different, but yes, I can see where that is passed along for sure.
Yeah, I dropped the ball on that. I was listening when Mr. Speed first said that about sitting down with Kiara and giving her those financial tips. And I was like, wow, I really dropped the ball with my two sons. I wish I had did that that piece. But as you all said during this interview, it's never too late. So
no, it's
that's
not
something that will start.
And for that, that, as you know, my other part of my story is that was I became that way because when I was in first grade, I can still remember at 6 years old when mm-hmm. we had to have money for our school fees. And my dad had gotten paid on a Friday and it was a Monday and he was already broke by Monday after he got mm-hmm. paid on Friday and didn't have the money available. And I said to myself at that point in time, I can just remember very vividly that I never, ever, ever want this to happen to me again. And particularly no one in my family ever had to happen this because it was a very embarrassing moment, but it was also a defining moment that it never left me. Even to this day, I still remember how I felt because I couldn't pay my fees because my dad didn't have the money to do it.
Wow. Wow. And just know those stories just stick out and we just never forget them. Those teachable moments, man. I know we could be here all day because I'm thinking of other questions now, but wow. Thank you both so much from the bottom of my heart. We really appreciate you and we hope to have you both back on soon.
We'd love to do that.
Definitely.
Thank you.
Just one extra thing. Just if anybody needs help, needs coaching, you can always contact me, Kiara@moneyempowered.com. I'm also on Instagram @money_empowered. And I have a website. It is moneyempowered.com. So if anybody
Thank you, Kiara. Hey, say that again too. Say that again. Can you say that again for our listeners, Kiara?
Sure. To get in touch with me, you can go to my website, which is moneyempowered.com. You can find me on social, on IG @money_empowered, or just by email at Kiara, that's K-I-E-R-A, @moneyempowered.com.
Thank you. God bless both of you.
And I'm retired and traveling, so
retired and traveling. I love
that's good.
It. God bless y'all.
Yeah, thank you too. Both.
Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Yes. All right, Jackie, what are your final thoughts of that? That was such a blessing, wasn't it?
Yes, it is. It really is. It's still sitting with me right now because I know I can. I have the old checkbook that I don't use. I'm about to have my daughter sit out and write bills, even though they're not mailing them out. Just write it out because she needs to be able to see it, you know, because I'm a lover of numbers and I love math. But I didn't realize until I was doing accounting last year and we were doing compound. And I didn't realize that when I was looking at it, like, okay, did this number multiply it? Oh, that's a really big number. Wait a minute. That's a really big number. I need to do something. I need to make these moves with my own money. So it definitely, when you can see it, it's like, okay, it is possible. And you have to start somewhere. So it definitely gives me inspiration to be able to do something. And anybody can start wherever they're at.
Well, I'll tell you, my degrees are in business. And I took accounting. And I can tell you, Mr. Speed was talking about how sounds like it was pretty easy for him. I can tell you, that's some serious stuff. So I tip my hat to him on that, man, because I struggle. But those lessons in compound interest, that's what we went over. And you're right, it's an eye-opener. So I really hope our listeners know what a blessing it was to have them on here. They were both heaven sent. So, but that is our show for this week. And again, I want to thank James and Kiara Speed. We want our listeners to be encouraged and to have the right information, invest, think ahead, and prepare for the future. And so thank you for listening to our podcast. We will see you next week as we do our part to make the world a better place. And as we always say, no matter how high we get, no matter how high we get, we never, ever stop looking up to God. Amen. Amen. Unknown. It's the unknown preacher.